Naaman. Great man. A successful career soldier. Well thought of. Brave. He was a valiant soldier, it says. Highly regarded. Great man, it says, in the sight of his master, the king of Aram. Like we said, Aram's just above Israel, as it were, just to the north. And at this moment, there's a sort of uneasy peace between Aram and Israel, and it doesn't always hold. Bands from Aram had gone out and taken captive a young girl. That was sort of fairly regular. There would be a quick sort of raid over the border, and they'd capture booty and take away a few people for slaves, just to keep Israel in order, just to make sure they know who was boss. Apparently, Aram, at this moment, had just developed a wonderful new secret weapon called the camel. Which could outrun any of the horses that Israel might have. Israel didn't have that many anyway. So they could nip across the border, swoop down on a town, plunder it, swoop away again, if that's the right word, and disappear before Israel knew what had hit them. And that's what they were tending to do. And hence this young Israelite girl is in the service of Naaman's wife. Okay, so he's a great bloke. And just before we go on, just in passing, notice that whatever Naaman might think, whatever his king might think, the author of the Book of Kings knows what's really going on. He was highly regarded because through him, the Lord had given victory to Aram. No matter how good a soldier, how brave a soldier Naaman is, the author knows it's God's overall control. Whether they acknowledge it or not, that's the bottom line. Okay, so there's this great, great man. And he's brought down to earth at the end of verse 1 in just 4 words. All this greatness just hits the buffers and stops dead. But he had leprosy. There's always a but, and this is quite a big one. But he had leprosy. Now then, quick explanation. In the Old Testament in particular, there's only one word, leprosy. And it covers all sorts of different skin diseases. It seems clear that this isn't what we normally think of as leprosy, where you have to be put aside in a colony and kept from any contact with the rest of society. It's not like that with Naaman. It doesn't stop him doing his job, and it doesn't stop him doing his job well. So maybe we're looking with our sort of modern, more precise medical terminology. Maybe we're looking at eczema, something like that. Doesn't prevent him from doing his job and doing it well. But it's also clear that it's sufficiently painful or embarrassing. For him to seek a cure. And he does. He looks in all sorts of places for a cure. We'll come back to how we know that a bit later. So there's Naaman. Great man, very successful, very highly regarded, but. Okay. 3 things then for us to take away and think about. The first thing is the fairly simple and fairly obvious thought that Naaman does at least face up to the problem that he's got and goes looking for a solution. All right, if you've got a skin disease, it's very difficult to do otherwise. But still, I mention that because sometimes you and I don't get that far. We put the fixed grin on. Yeah, no, I'm fine, thanks. And we bash on regardless. And we do a brilliant impression of an ostrich. Head in the sand. No, nothing's wrong, I'm fine. No. No, don't do that. We need to face our problems, our difficulties, our weaknesses, and admit that they're there. I'm not fine, really. Thank you. It's all right to do that. Nobody is perfect. There is no shame in admitting that you need help. In fact, until we do that, there's no way we're going to get a solution, because if we don't admit the problem, we're never going to bother looking for the answer. As I say, it's simple and it's obvious, but sometimes, what are we struggling with? And are we trying to ignore it, brush it under the carpet and hope it'll go away? No, don't. Face it and admit it and look for help. Simple thought. Second thing, Naaman is willing to try anything, again we'll come back to this, to find an answer to his problem. But he's not looking in the right place. So this little servant girl from Israel points him towards Elisha, the prophet who is in Samaria. She says, he would sort it out. There's a prophet in Samaria, a man of God. He would help. Again, just in passing, the word in Hebrew for a prophet is nabi. It's a great word. And all it means is mouth. Mouth. That's all it means. We're often taught, aren't we? We are God's hands and feet. We are God's eyes and ears. And in the Old Testament, it was fairly clear from the word itself, the prophet, the man of God, is God's mouthpiece. That's his job, to speak God's word into any given situation. There's a prophet in Samaria, the young girl says. He would sort him out. So when his wife tells him, Naaman thinks, all right, let's try this. And he goes to the king. And tells him and asks for compassionate leave. And says, no problem, the king says, no problem. In fact, I'll send you a letter of introduction to my friend, the King of Israel. Yeah. We'll come back to the letter as well. And off he goes to see the King of Israel. No. No. If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria. And off Naaman goes to see the king. And neither his king nor the king of Israel are any use to him whatsoever. His king, whose name is Ben-Hadad, is one of those who reckon that any problem can be solved if you chuck enough money at it. Everything has its price. And the the cash that that Naaman takes with him to buy the favor of the king of Israel are enormous. 10 talents of silver. Now, a talent isn't a measure of currency, it's a measure of weight. Back in 1 Kings, there's a king called Omri. And Omri goes and buys a piece of land. And on that land, he builds his capital city, which is called Samaria. And eventually, the area takes on that name as well. So there's the city and the area, the region of Samaria. Omri builds his capital city on this land that he's bought. So it's not a little allotment. It's a sizable chunk of land. And it costs him 2 talents of silver. That's about 70 kilos. Something like 10 stone if you're working in old money. 2 talents, that's what it costs him. To buy enough land to build a city on. And here's Naaman taking 5 times that amount. Plus the gold, plus the clothing. It is an enormous amount. And it won't help a bit. They're assuming that the prophet that the little girl talked about will be on the payroll of the king of Israel, obviously. It's the same mistake that the wise men make when they come looking for the baby Jesus. The new king is born. Well, obviously it's going to be born in the palace, isn't it? No, not obvious at all. All this cash, and it doesn't help a bit. God is not impressed or swayed by any of that. In fact, where our reading stopped, Naaman goes back to Elisha and says, "Please accept now a gift from your servant." And Elisha says, "No, I don't want anything. This is God's grace, not to do with me. I don't want rewarded because I didn't do anything. God did it." Israel's king, whose name is Joram, he is into political intrigue. That's his great thing. Like we said, there's this sort of uneasy peace between the two. And it won't take much to upset the balance. He gets this letter of introduction that Naaman brings with him and immediately starts reading between the lines. "With this letter, I am sending you my servant Naaman so that you may cure him of his leprosy." What can I do? I'm not God. How am I supposed to cure him? Now, wait a bit. I can't cure him. Ben-Hadad, the king over there, knows I can't cure him. So I'm going to have to send him back in the state that he came in. And he knows that. And he'll take it as a personal insult and, yeah, I can see what he's doing. He's after an excuse to declare war. He's spoiling for a fight. He's looking for an excuse. I know. I understand. Again, none of this is any use at all to Naaman. Because he's looking in the wrong place. And the message comes from Elisha that finally sorts it out. "What are you messing about at? Send him down to me. God will sort it." And finally, Naaman gets to Elisha's house where he should have been all along. What about us? Are we, do we look here, there, and everywhere for the answers to our problem instead of going to God? I think I mentioned this before. Back in the 1970s, there was a Formula One driver, nice guy, pleasant guy, called David Purley. And he came from Bognor Regis on the south coast. And he used to proudly walk about with a t-shirt which said, Bognor Regis, Britain's last resort. When we've got a problem, how often do we make Jesus our last resort? When we've looked everywhere else and got nowhere. Jesus shouldn't be our last resort. He should be our first port of call. I was reading Psalm 121 the other day. I love Psalm 121. I lift my eyes to the hills. I think that's gorgeous, that psalm. And the writer who wrote that is very clear. He's got no doubts whatsoever. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Boom. It's useless looking anywhere else. My help comes from the Lord. What a friend we have in Jesus, yeah? Are we weak and heavy laden, cumbered with a load of care? And the answer is, take it to the Lord in prayer. Don't waste time and effort looking everywhere else. Yeah, we know it. But do we? Do we do it? Last resort rather than first port of call. Okay, face your problems, take them to God. Don't bother looking anywhere else. Third thing. Naaman gets a message from Elisha, telling him to go and jump in the river, I suppose. And Naaman is not impressed. Does he not know who I am, how important I am? I've come all this way, and he doesn't even bother to see me. He just sends a messenger. And anyway, he's not doing it right. Told you earlier on, we know that Naaman's been looking here, there, and everywhere for an answer to his problem, and this is how we know. He's not doing it right. I know how these healings work. You've got to do all the right incantations and make all the right gestures and say all the right words. And he's not doing it right. I know. To which the obvious answer is, if you know so much about how healing works, how come it hasn't worked? Anyway, Naaman, full of his own importance, goes off in a huff. And his servants come to him and say something like, don't be such an idiot, just do as he's asking you, will you? It's not wonderfully difficult. Yeah, all right, they put it much more politely and respectfully than that. But that's basically what they're saying. Just do it, will you? Not messing about. And he does. And he's cured. God heals him. And he goes back to Elisha, very much impressed, and I suspect a little bit chastened, and says to Elisha, now I know that there's no God anywhere else. Now I know. God sorted his problem for him. But I'd like us to notice how. Like we said, neither his king nor Israel's king are any help to him at all. They're too caught up in their own agendas. And from start to finish, Naaman is moved towards God's solution to his problem by the servants. It's his wife's servant girl who points him towards Elisha. It's Elisha's servant who comes and tells him what he should do in order to receive God's healing. It's his own servants who persuade him that he ought to do it instead of standing on his high horse, sitting on his high horse. Naaman's self-importance needs sorting first, and then God can do something with him. It's the servants, right the way through, who move him towards his healing. What are we like at learning from other people? We all know or have known someone that we can look up to, a wise and experienced Christian whose judgment we trust and whose advice we'd be happy to follow. Great. Not a problem. If you've got somebody like that, great. Give thanks to God for them. If you haven't, ask him to give you one. But beyond that, God can and does use anybody to bring his help to bear on a given situation. Are there folk that we, not look down on exactly, but maybe don't listen to as much because we don't really feel they've got much to offer us? No, that's not right. Don't pick and choose. God can use anyone to speak into our situation. God's put us all together here in Bethania so that we can help and encourage one another, so that we can all help and encourage one another. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Yes, but that help can come through anybody. What I'm trying to do is encourage us, all of us, to listen to one another and to listen to God so that we can be ready to offer the right bit of helpful advice to one another and to be ready to receive from one another. So there you go. We need to face the problems that we've got and not bash on regardless, head in the sand. We need to take our problems to God first off and not waste so much time and effort looking in the wrong place. And we need to be prepared to hear his answer from anybody, and not pick and choose who we think is worth listening to. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the way you worked things out for Naaman. Help us to learn what we need to learn from him, so that we too can find answers to our problems in you. Teach us all of this for Jesus' sake.